I'm Brian McLaughlin, president of Orion Advisor Technology, and along with Natalie Wolfson, Orion CEO, we've been taking over Orion's popular fintech podcast, The Fuse Show. In 2024, we have one goal in mind: share stories that actually show you how you can innovate, disrupt, and win for your business. Each episode will be sharing compelling stories of innovation across the industry, including a few of our own friends. We're going to explore groundbreaking ideas from fintech's need for a data revolution to how investors are demanding more from you than ever before to do so much more. And together, we're going to light the fuse to your growth. So welcome everyone to The Fuse Show, and welcome Natalie. Great to have you with me again today to have a wonderful conversation today with Ian Makes Sense and for our takeover season again in The Fuse Show. So thanks, Natalie, for being here, and thanks, Ian, for also being here.
Hey, Ryan, I appreciate it, and I'm really looking forward to having a conversation about innovation as it relates to regulation and SEC rules, which is not an area that most people think of as deeply innovative. But Ian and Ryan and I are going to have a conversation about what is going on and innovative at the SEC and what our clients, our valued clients like Ian, can do about it. So welcome, Ian. We're looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Yeah, thank you, Natalie, and then thank you, Brian, for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. And this is going to be a really interesting conversation, I think. You know, when you talk about the regulations and you talk about innovation and where we push the edge sometimes, right? But let's start off with you. Let's do a little fun icebreakers we like to do here at the Fuse Show. So first of all, you're from Cincinnati, Ohio, is that right?
That's right. That's right. I am.
Tell me a little bit, what should people be looking at with Cincinnati? It's not exactly like, you know, the tourist hotspot. I throw a dart. Oh, we're going to Cincinnati. But I got to imagine Cincinnati is probably pretty awesome, actually.
It is. I've got to say, I've lived in, you know, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Washington, D.C. I've lived all over. I've got to say, Cincinnati has fantastic park systems. I think one of the best in the country. Hundreds of miles of trails across. Now, we don't have the mountains of, you know, along the West Coast, but we have a great park system. We have great trails. We have actually a lot of major, major events here. We have an MLS team. Obviously, we have the Reds and the Bengals, and we've got the Cincinnati Open, which is the tennis tournament right before the U.S. Open, if you're a tennis fan. And they do a world-class production, as well as, I believe it still counts as the largest Oktoberfest outside of Germany in the world. So we've got a lot of things going. It's really fun part of the country, and I really love I love being here.
That's really awesome. I love that last fun fact. Largest Oktoberfest, in the country, or in the second to the world. That's killer.
Yeah.
So you do a lot of reading, a lot of podcasting, I'm sure, and stuff like that. You got any tips or insights of current things you've been listening to or reading for our listeners?
You know, it's funny. The one thing that and it comes to mind and stands out to me because it's a little bit on my mind. And it's not super relevant to compliance or anything else, but I did read the Triathlete's Training Bible because I have a triathlon in about 2 weeks, first of the season. So it's like top of mind for me. And that really kind of changed my perspective on how you train, how you work, and how you live your life a little bit. They advocate for a lot of low intensity type stuff versus I think a lot of athletes just go as hard as they possibly can. And I think we do that in our work life too. So that kind of changed my perspective. I thought it was a great book, not something I had read before. And obviously it's top of mind for me right now.
That's way cool. I'm guessing that Ironmans and some of the athletic activities are probably part of your hobbies and passion. But is there anything else out there people should know about you?
Well, yeah, obviously the triathlons are a big part of my life. I'm a very large automotive racing fan. Obviously, Formula One's taken over the United States and the rest of the world recently, but I do restore some cars. I'm currently working on a 2015 FRS that will be an autocross car in the near future. So I spend a lot of my time outside of parenting and work working on cars.
I love that. I love cars. Natalie knows that because I was showing her one of my new cars I got. But I also have an old classic Subaru WRX. I just cannot get rid of it. I just can't get rid of this car because it's just so awesome.
I understand.
So tell me a little about your background. You know, what got you into compliance? What got you started in here? Tell me a little about the firm too. And how did you end up on this career trajectory?
Well, I will tell you, I don't think anyone really ever directly gets involved into compliance. You're not like a kid sitting there saying, I want to do compliance, but we all end up winding our way into this industry somehow. Where I really got my start was back in 2014, Matt Swindeman, who's the CEO of KeyBridge Compliance, had launched a firm called Grading Compliance Solutions. And I had known Matt actually for a number of years. He was the business law professor of mine. He also taught in my MBA program. So I'd known him for a very long time. And I'd spent several years working in the sports industry with the Cincinnati Bengals, tennis tournaments, things like that, dabbled in HR consulting, but never really found my calling. And Matt and I just reconnected one day, and as he launched Graydon, I joined him. And from about 2014 to 2018, Matt and I grew that business together. And then in 2019, we launched our current iteration, which is KeyBridge Compliance. And look, the rest is really history. I've spent the last 10 years or so working with RIAs, mutual funds, private funds, in a variety of compliance roles as a consultant. We serve as the, just traditional consulting, but we do as much as being the actual outsourced CCO, which is kind of our highest and best thing that we do here at KeyBridge Compliance.
I mean, I want to say out there out loud then that, I mean, you guys obviously have a ton of experience with what you're working with and how you're digging into the compliance. We want to dig in today, and Natalie, maybe kick us off here, but we want to dig in today on how the regulations and compliance can also work together with innovation, ideas and AI and other technologies out there, and how that balances each other.
Absolutely. It's really an interesting time in our industry. This is an extremely active SEC as it relates to rulemaking, which in many ways is good. We understand our roles, we can comply with them, we can all get aligned. But the volume right now, we're running at about 25 rules potentially slated for this year. There's just no question that's a lot of change and a lot of innovation. And the rules themselves are tackling really complex issues. Everything from cybersecurity to ESG and all sorts of financial services activities in between. So let's start with the SEC's proposals related to environmental, social, and governance investment policies. And can you just talk us through the backgrounds of that and what the SEC is trying to achieve and how they're trying to achieve it?
Yeah, obviously, I think the background of the rule is just the rise in importance and desire for ESG funds, ESG strategies. I think there was a PwC report from, now this is a couple of years old, from 2022 that essentially said asset managers globally, and not just in the United States, but globally, are expected to double the size of their assets under management that are allocated to ESG funds. I mean, we're talking from, 18 trillion to, over 30 trillion. And I think that's a really big piece of why the SEC and Chairman Gensler are so focused on ESG funds and strategies. And I think the rule addresses a kind of an important topic for our retail investors, our institutional investors, which is the disclosure of ESG. What are we actually seeking to achieve with ESG strategies? And I think the increasing kind of public concern and awareness of climate issues, society inequalities has led to this rise. And the ESG disclosure rule itself really is aimed at advisors and mutual funds who are actively advertising or investing in ESG strategies. And there's really kind of three central pieces to this disclosure rule, in my opinion. So, and the amount of disclosure really depends on how you're using ESG strategies or funds. I think there's kind of the lowest bar, which is what I'd call integration, which is where you have an ESG strategy or fund, and you're kind of just factoring ESG impacts alongside non-ESG factors. And really your job there as an advisor is just to describe how you factor both ESG and non-ESG factors into your strategy. I think that's the most crucial. I think that's where a lot of advisors are going to fall. We know, obviously, that ESG is important to investors and that it's becoming a much more crucial element in their portfolio. So this is where I think a lot of folks are going to land, is you simply need to describe how you're using ESG factors alongside your more traditional non-ESG elements. And then you really have your ESG-focused fund strategies where it is a particular ESG, strategy that's built around that. And you really need to provide detailed disclosure in exactly how that ESG strategy is crafted and maintained. And you're going to have a standardized ESG table explaining the risks associated with these investments and that type of thing. So then, lastly, you have impact funds, which are probably much more robust, right? These are funds or strategies that have a singular or multiple objective with that ESG strategy. And you have to describe how you are going to measure and maintain that objective, right? If you're seeking a singular, really kind of core objective, you have to outline to retail and institutional investors, how are you measuring your impact, right? I think there is somewhat of a lack of trust on the institutional investor side of ESG funds and their strategies. I don't think there's enough clear disclosure. And I think advisors and other folks who make that a clear presentation to their clients of, here's what we're doing on ESG, here's how we're measuring it, here's how we're looking at it, I think that's going to be a really welcome sight for a lot of investors as they, obviously, this is becoming such a big thing, a big core element of their portfolio. And if you're able to articulate that very well to them, I think that's a major, major selling point.
So I think, one of the ones that I'm really interested in and following a lot is, of course, the SEC AI rule and the proposed rule, how that's going to evolve over the next few months or a year as maybe they work on. I know it's a big passion project for the SEC to get their hands wrapped around this and put some guidance in. You talk about, be able to describe and really publicly identify how you're using some of these technologies and maybe even though some of the methodologies that are being utilized in those technology components. We haven't like to maybe describe, but can you go into some depth into how you see this AI rule maybe shaping out and then what it really kind of maybe means for the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing I always caution with proposed rules, right, is sometimes the final rule will look, vastly different, right? That's where we always start with it. And the proposed rule was intensive, right? I think to understand the history of where Chairman Gensler and the SEC is coming from this, I look to Chairman Gensler, I believe he was a professor at MIT, and one of the fears that the SEC has about AI and predictive analytics in general is that it can be an unpredictable and difficult technology to determine the outputs, right? Whether is the AI putting the client's interests ahead of the firm's, that type of thing. And really what they're fearing is that AI models will suddenly be produced on just a few foundational kind of core models. And then obviously we're going to be producing similar outputs, which makes it more likely that if we're using those outputs for investment methodologies, investment decisions, we're going to have concentrated risk. We're going to have concentrated risk in our financial markets for our investors and other folks. So that's what their core of it. They fear that kind of homogenous industry outcome, which puts our financial markets at risk. And that's what the SEC, and I think that's why it was such a robust rule when it was originally proposed, is there is a lot of historical, I don't want to say fear, but there is a lot of historical concern about this type of technology and not just AI. So
the historical fear of it, right? I mean, this proposed rule has been out for a while now. They've been working on it. And like we're just seeing now like OpenAI coming out of the new GPT that searches the web live and all crazy, cool, amazing things that they've demoed off this week. I mean, how does the SEC try and keep up with technology when while they're proposing, the industry's already moved generations ahead?
Well, I frankly think that's the challenge of the regulatory regime in general, right? That's the challenge of the SEC is you're always maybe a step behind and you have to formulate your rules to, survive the test of time, as it were. So I think they have that challenge and I'm not sure they've totally conquered it quite yet because this AI rule, to your point, it's more than just covering AI. It's covered technology, as it were, is anything that's algorithmic models, correlation matrix, you know, or similar programs that predict or forecast investment-related behaviors or decisions. So it could be if you've created an algorithmic model in Excel, you potentially have a covered technology there. And I think that's why the rule is written so broadly to really almost future-proof itself a little bit.
It's interesting, Ian. Like, you could understand why the SEC would be concerned about models reflecting biases and making sure that we're all taking steps to ensure that that doesn't happen. Yeah, it's interesting that future-proofing, you can also see it a little bit in the cybersecurity rules that are underway right now. And, you know, all of us are deeply concerned about cybersecurity and protecting the client information. There's a lot of regulation that's happening globally and within certain states in the United States to make sure that we're protecting the privacy of our client data. It's an incredibly important part of Orion's go-forward growth strategy to bring client information together so that we can create a much, much better experience for advisors and richer conversations between advisors and the clients. But in doing so, you open yourself up to risk. And so I would absolutely love it if you could talk to us a little bit about the SEC cybersecurity, proposed cybersecurity, you know, enhancements of the cybersecurity rules and where you think the SEC is going with that.
Yeah, I think the SEC is following the rest of the industry in the marketplace, right? This is a huge concern for not just the financial services industry, but just the world in general, right? The more data we have, the more we have to protect it, particularly, you know, the personal identifiable information, all the sensitive information that we in the financial services industry have access to and that we store. I think what the SEC's proposed rules and final rules are looking at is they understand the market holds a lot of data and they hold a lot of really sensitive data that can be abused by somebody who gains access and control. So I think they are trying to help us better protect a lot of what we hold on our clients' behalf. And our clients have to have faith that we are storing their data appropriately, that we are protecting it. Because I think not that there's trauma in the industry, but they've seen so many examples of large scale companies having data breaches. And we learn after the fact that maybe the safeguards in place weren't quite enough. Particularly for the types of data they hold. So a lot of these SEC rules are really, you know, focused on that piece of it. And in particular, the actual notification to clients, right? So that the clients have a heads up that access, that data was accessed, that it was breached, and that there's potential your data could be abused and used against you and that type of thing. And a lot of the rule is educating your clients. If something happens, here's what you do. Here's how you need to proceed. And here's how we're helping you. And here's how we're going to store your data and protect it. Because I think while the industry does have really good practices and best practices and guidance, I think this formalizes all of those best practices that are out there and should make it more clear to your clients how you're protecting their data. That should be a real selling point. As you're working with investors, is you are protecting their data. You take this very seriously. You want to make sure that there aren't breaches or anything along those lines. Because I think folks that are after this type of data, they're not just going after really large scale firms. They're going after small to medium firms as well. And that's really their focus. They feel that maybe those types of firms, they hold a lot of data, but they may not have the protections in place. So I think that should be a real focus for investment advisors and brokers out there right now.
I think that's really interesting because many advisors are even self-proclaimed not technologists, right? That this is not what the business they came in to do is to protect client data, cybersecurity protections, safeguards around that, all due diligence are required. And in our survey, not that long ago, you know, I think compliance or regulatory services was the number one outsourcing demand. Like, people just don't want to do that themselves, right? They want to push it over to KeyBridge, which, by the way, thank you for being an amazing partner with Orion. We love the partnership, guys, and to help you provide advisors. But I mean, 44% want to outsource it. The thing that we're seeing too is that there's more and more requirements and due diligence monitoring requirements being put out there to advisors when they use third parties. In fact, I just saw it recently with some partners we're working with where we may have to do due diligence even further downstream based on tools that they pick. At a certain point, it kind of gets out of control, right? I mean, how much due diligence do we do and how deep do we keep going? How's this going to affect, though, the ability for people to outsource like yourselves to help advisors do their job better and be in regulation and be in compliance with the industry?
Yeah, I it's going to make it a lot tougher. On one hand, right, I think buried in the economic analysis of the SEC's rule, which, you know, is hundreds of pages long, you know, they felt that on average, right, this was going to cost advisors and broker-dealers $132,000 in one-time fees and an average annual spend of $44,000, right? And those are big numbers. Those are real numbers. I mean, that's in an age of, you know, fees getting smaller, you know, everything hurts the bottom line. Those are big numbers for advisors to swallow right now. So it's going to make it challenging. But on the other hand, I think for advisors that are looking at this rule, I think hopefully that given its broad scope, you start to look at your vendors and all the vendors that you're using. You're going to analyze those vendors that you're using and identify ones that may not be working very well for you or aren't adding as much value to you. And I think over time, this hopefully kind of, you know, eliminates some of that vendor hopping, as it were. Allows you to be more consistent with who you're working with. You get a little bit more efficient, and then that in turn is going to provide higher service to your clients. So, you know, as KeyBridge and other service providers I've spoken with are looking at this rule, I think what advisors really need to do right now is first step is identify your service providers. It's who are you working with? What data and services do they have of yours, right? Paying particular attention to those that have sensitive information or access to sensitive information of your clients or your firm. And then I think you need to look at, you know, delegating due diligence already. Even if we don't have a final rule, it's best practice to begin doing that. I think ultimately, as KeyBridge, as we look at it, is I think what we find that the industry is going to do is start to create some like due diligence questionnaire kind of canned responses a little bit. I think that's given the scope of that rule, and it's big, right? It's basically a covered service provider is anybody and everybody that you hire as an advisor. You're just going to have, you know, for ourselves, it's a due diligence questionnaire packet and response. And it will address all the major concerns. How do we store your firm's data? How do we protect it? How do we work with you? How is that all encrypted? All those types of things. That's where I think the industry is going to head. And maybe that eliminates some of the burden on firms and advisors, but it is still a really significant piece of legislation. And I think, you know, as I look at the SEC and all of the rules they've proposed, you know, that was a really big one. That's a really costly rule. And I think, you know, the administration, the Biden administration and the conservatives in Congress and the Senate, I think there's a lot of pressure on Chairman Gensler and the SEC in general that some of these rules may have gone above and beyond where they wanted it, particularly the Biden administration. I think in an election year there, you know, they're really focused on, hey, the economy is doing well in their opinion and those types of things. And maybe some of these rules are not quite what they wanted to see. So I think there is going to be pressure maybe to tone down some of the rulemaking as we finish out the year into the election.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ian. And I do want to say, really appreciate your partnership. You know, Orion Compliance works at KeyBridge, and we try to provide technology services to help our clients ensure their compliance with industry regulations. And working with you to serve our respective shared clients is a larger thing for us to work on together. So I wanted to ask you if there's anything that Brian and I didn't cover that you think is important for advisors to know as it relates to the SEC and the rulemaking and innovation that's happening there.
Yeah, kind of the last thing I would say is I know there's a lot of rules. We've talked about a lot of them today, and there's a lot more proposed out there. And that can feel overwhelming for advisors who are working on this. And what I would say is, you know, how are you prioritizing these things? That's what advisors a lot of the times ask me. And what I say is look to what the SEC is doing in terms of enforcement, in terms of risk alerts. They don't act in silence a lot of the time. I know it could feel like that, but look at what they're bringing enforcement actions? What are they going to market with, and start prioritizing from there, right? They've fined and brought several advisors through enforcement for off-channel communications recently. So, you know, those types of things, look to what they're telling the marketplace. That's what they're focused on. And that's where you should begin your work and start now. Don't wait till the, you know, implementation date comes close. You know, start now, and you're going to be much better prepared for examinations or other things that come out from the SEC. And that's how you get ahead of these things, because there's a lot of rules. And while it might slow down, I think this is the world we live in. And there's going to be a lot of final rules that come down the pipeline in the next, you know, 18 to 24 months.
Thank you so much. And really appreciate you joining us on the show. We always ask one final question. And that question is, if you could snap your fingers and make it happen right now, what futuristic, sci-fi oriented technology or tool do you think would most benefit fintech for our industry?
Oh, man. Even though I just said caution against like the great use of AI, I do think like a Jarvis like AI from Iron Man or Cantana or something like that would be super cool. I would love to be able to ask it to do a lot of the research and, you know, those things for me. That to me would be great. So I can hope for that. Maybe AI will get there someday.
Maybe you're going to get to your wish there before you know.
I hope so.
Ian Mason, president of KeyBridge Compliance, thank you for being a fantastic guest on our show and a wonderful partner to all the advisors out there, to Orion. If people need to go and check out and see what you guys are doing, you're a guru of knowledge around the SEC rulings and how to protect advisors, do the right thing. So thank you so much for being here today and joining us.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Natalie. It was a pleasure to be here.